The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. And in today's episode, we'll be discussing two major issues: how Ramadan is celebrated in the subcontinent with fervor and zeal, and the traditions associated with the holy month in India, Pakistan, Kashmir and Afghanistan. So stay tuned.
In this special episode of The Subcontinent, we will discuss how Ramadan is celebrated in the subcontinent with fervor and zeal. And we shall also take a look at the traditions associated with the holy month in India, Pakistan, Kashmir, and Afghanistan.
Ramadan, the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, is the time when Muslims worldwide come together to celebrate and observe their faith. During this month, Muslims abstain from food and drink from dawn to dusk while engaging in acts of prayer and charity. For Muslims, Ramadan is not only a time for spiritual reflection and renewal, but also an opportunity to connect with fellow humans and form a sense of unity and belongingness that transcends borders and boundaries.
The practice of fasting during Ramadan is one of the fundamental aspects of Islam. Despite cultural and geographical differences, Ramadan serves as a unifying force among Muslims, connecting them globally. The communal breaking of the fast, known as iftar, is a particularly important aspect of Ramadan. Families and communities come together during this time to share food and fellowship, strengthening bonds and forging new connections. The iftar meal is often a festive occasion and provides an opportunity for people to connect with their community. Mosques and community centers become hubs of activity during Ramadan, where Muslims gather to pray, read the Quran, do charity, and try to understand the religion better. This increased activity and communal engagement creates a sense of unity and purpose that extends beyond the individual and the family.
The holy month of Ramadan is being celebrated with great colors and festivities in the subcontinent, and especially in Pakistan, from where I belong. As for your question, I just wanted to highlight a few things about, you know, the traditional and cultural things about our continent. There is a special namaz being conducted in subcontinent, which is called Taraweeh. The namaz of Taraweeh is the recitation of Quran, and it's for some longer period as compared to the normal namaz we are being offered for daily. So this brings, you know, these namaz are being conducted in large numbers, and thousands of people attend them every day. And the timing of this traditional Taraweeh is in the evening after the break of the fast. And when people attend these gatherings in large numbers, this actually brings them together, and this, close the gap between different people from different languages and different cultural backgrounds. As far as the other thing I want to highlight in this, for our culture, we also have, you know, Ramadan-themed television shows, which are very popular in our region. These shows are, you know, cooking shows specifically targeting the audience who are, you know, not eating for the whole day. And, you know, this is very attractive for the people who are not eating for the whole day. Cooking shows, then religious debates are being conducted on the TV channels. And this kind of stuff are being exported to the rest of the world, especially in Northern America and Canada and Australia and the UK.
Muslims aim to purify their souls, redirect their hearts away from the worldly distractions, and cultivate qualities such as self-discipline, willfulness, and empathy towards others. The sense of shared sacrifice and devotion to the faith during Ramadan is a powerful bonding experience that strengthens the Muslim community worldwide.
Ramadan is celebrated with much fervor in both India and Pakistan. It's a time of deep spiritual reflection and heightened devotion for the Muslims. As the holiest month in Islam, Muslims engage in the acts of charity and self-reflection to invoke blessings from God. Many mosques and community centers in the subcontinent offer free iftar meals to those in need. The spirit of unity and spirituality that Ramadan brings is palpable, transcending borders and uniting Muslims in India, Pakistan, and around the world.
In India, the month of Ramadan is a time of vibrant festivities, marked by colorful bazaars, lit-up streets, and traditional foods. The iftar spread includes an array of delicious and mouth-watering dishes such as biryanis, samosas, and kebabs unique to each region of India. Although Muslims throughout India observe this holy month, the main hubs of Ramadan celebrations in the country include Delhi, Maharashtra, Uttar Pradesh, Kerala, and Hyderabad. Similarly, in Pakistan, Ramadan is celebrated with equal zeal and enthusiasm. In Ramadan, the street vendors begin to set up their stalls before dawn. At Sehri, the time before sunrise, vendors sell traditional stew, bread, and yogurt drinks. Meanwhile, preparations for iftar commence hours before the breaking of the fast. As iftar approaches, the bazaars come alive with vibrant outlets selling savory treats. The sights and sounds of these bustling bazaars during Ramadan are a hallmark of the festive atmosphere that pervades throughout the holy month. Observing Ramadan entails not only fasting throughout the day, but also participating in communal prayer rituals at local mosques.
Muslims in subcontinent, especially in Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, where the Muslims are in large numbers, they try to connect to their God and get closer to their creator by, you know, spending money in form of charity. Charity is a very important and integral part of our culture. In subcontinent, people, you know, people distribute free food among, you know, Muslims and non-Muslims as well. They distribute free drinks. They give them free dresses, free clothes. Sometimes they try to help poor people to pay the fees of children of underprivileged persons. So the concept of charity rises in the month of Ramadan. This is a very unique thing in our subcontinent, and this also has been exported from our region to the rest of the world. Especially, I see these charity events in United Kingdom and Europe and Australia. So yeah, this charity thing is very important and highlighted during the Ramadan.
Charitable acts such as donating to the poor, feeding the hungry, and offering money are also an integral part of the Ramadan celebrations in these two countries.
In the picturesque Himalayan Valley, the holy month of Ramadan is celebrated with great reverence and devotion. The entire region comes alive with a sense of celebration and joy. In Kashmir, the observance of Ramadan is marked by unique customs and traditions that reflect the rich cultural heritage of the region. The tradition of giving is deeply ingrained in the culture of the valley, and during the holy month, the spirit of generosity is heightened with people donating generously to charitable causes.
During the holy month of Ramadan in the Muslim-majority region of Kashmir, markets can be seen bustling with activity as locals prepare for the month-long fast. Contrary to the subcontinent, the business establishments in the valley close at iftar times and people prefer to break their fast at home. Dates imported from various parts of the world are highly sought after and form an important part of the iftar meal. Households stock up on large quantities of chicken, mutton, and fruits as they are a mandatory part of the Ramadan delicacies. The tradition of Sahar Khans, or human alarm clocks, is still preserved in the region despite modern advancements. Sahar Khans take to the streets in the early morning hours to beat drums, gongs, and shofars to wake up people for Sehri, the early morning meal before fasting. However, in this region marred by decades-long conflict, families that have suffered the loss of their loved ones celebrate the holy month differently. The conflict has led to the demise or disappearance of many breadwinners, leaving their families unable to afford even the most basic meals for iftar or Sehri. As a result, numerous widows and wives of disappeared men rely on alms and the generosity of people during Ramadan. Special prayers are held in hopes of a resolution to the conflict and the return of peace to the region.
In Afghanistan, the entire country comes together to celebrate the holy month of Ramadan, which is seen as a time of establishing a closer connection with God. Several days ahead of Ramadan, most Afghans spend their off-work hours dedicated to shopping for groceries and preparing for the holy month ahead. While many spend the nights in mosques engaging in prayers, it's also considered a duty to assist the less fortunate. And it's common to find individuals distributing cooked meals after breaking their fasts.
In Afghanistan, the first day of the holy month of Ramadan is marked as a public holiday. As is the case of many other Muslim nations, during daylight hours, all restaurants and cafes are shuttered. Television networks abstain from airing any music, and people avoid listening to music. The preparation of traditional foods is a significant part of Ramadan, with Afghans preparing special dishes such as mantu, dumplings filled with meat and onions, kabuli polo, rice with lamb and raisins, and shir khurma, a sweet milk, and vermicelli pudding. Additionally, dishes such as the special Afghan pickle, chutney, bolani, dates, and jalabi are commonly found on dining tables during iftar. For Afghan Muslims, night prayers in the mosque form a significant part of the holy month. Ramadan time for charity and giving back to the community.
In Saudi Arabia, we have a very unique recitation of, you know, religious poetry, which is called Qawwali. Qawwali and Sufi songs are, you know, closely related to with Ramadan because they are about, you know, holy figure, God the Almighty, you know, respected historical figures of Islamic history. So the Qawwali songs are popular in our region and people always think of it. This is when Qawwali, Qawwali even, you know, this taken from subcontinent to the rest. It's popular among Muslims as social media has become around the world. So these songs are being listened in large numbers and millions of being seen. The other thing I want to discuss is the concept of Chand Raat. Chand Raat is the night before the Eid, the end of holy month of Ramadan, being celebrated with great colors. People, you know, have got the girls, you know, the henna on their hands and cloths and seafoods at their home. So they, you know, they all celebrate Chand Raat with, you know, vibrant, has been, you know, transported to the rest of the world.
Afghans are known for their hospitality and generosity, and during the month of Ramadan, this spirit is amplified. Muslims throughout the country engage in acts of charity, providing food and other basic necessities to the needy, orphans, and the less fortunate.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh.
Now, to have more insights on this, we are joined by academic Mr. Ahmed Al-Fagh from the central Indian state of Maharashtra. Thank you for joining us, sir. Now, Mr. Al-Fagh, how has the celebration of Ramadan in the subcontinent influenced broader trends in Islamic culture and tradition, both regionally and globally?
So as we know that Ramadan is approaching us, and largely the traditions that are followed throughout the Muslim countries and the Islamic world, they are largely the same. If I wish to figure out a single or a few of them where the Indian subcontinent is different from the rest of the Islamic world, so there is the celebration of Chand Raat. So basically, the night of the sighting of the moon is treated very differently in the subcontinent. So what we have as that either it's the moon sighting of Ramzan or the moon sighting for the Eid. On both the occasions, we have the full night where the Muslim population go out for shopping. The whole the streets, the houses, and all other places are decorated. And with the Muslim diaspora and the subcontinent diaspora moving to the different parts of the world, I believe they have taken along with them this tradition. And now what we witness that even in the European countries and the Western countries, we figure that the similar kind of vibe can be felt on the day of the sighting of the moon. So I believe that Chand Raat is something we can take that as a very good example, that a tradition that has garnered or nourished in the subcontinent and have been taken to the different parts of the world.
Sir, can you discuss the ways in which Ramadan serves as a platform for interfaith and intercultural dialogue in the subcontinent, and how this promotes greater understanding and cooperation between different communities?
So as I was mentioning about it, that it is very well accepted and respected by the individuals of all the faiths. And, you know, interfaith is something which is very important and very essential for the understanding and development of religion and culture in any area. So we have always felt that whenever we are fasting, our brothers and sisters, they are very much concerned about us. Okay, so coming up with different questions like, do you you don't drink even water? Would you like to have some fruits if you are not having the food? So it when these kinds of questions come up, the curiosity they have, it helps us in bringing this topic with them quite easily. And they are very ready to listen to what is the objective behind fasting, why the Muslims fast for the whole month of Ramzan, and what are the timings of the fast, what we can do, what we cannot do. And when we are discussing all these aspects, it's always an opportunity for us that we can impart, or we can bring them or accustom them to the basic understanding of the religion, the very purpose of such an important obligation that is there on the community. So I believe that whole process, the kind of curiosity, the kind of vibe it generates, it gives us an opportunity to discuss about it with our brethren here. And in this process, this interfaith, intercultural dialogue, it is initiated. And it is an important occasion to, you know, discuss and educate our brethren about this whole process.
Sir, could you tell us about some of the unique cultural and religious practices associated with the celebration of Ramadan in South Asia, and how do they differ from other Muslim majority countries?
As I was mentioning to you about the Chand Raat, the night of the sighting of the moon, that is one thing which I have already deliberated upon, that how this the celebration of this particular night has reached out to the different parts of the world. Other than that, I believe that something which is very interesting about the Ramzan is the foods that are served. And if you move from region to region, the foods will keep on changing. Like for an example, the region of Hyderabad, it is famous for its haleem during the month of Ramzan. And every year you will find the same stall. Other similar item can be roux afza. It's a kind of a drink which is very common in the regions of the subcontinent. And I believe you won't find that drink largely anywhere else. But the Indian subcontinent, every household in Ramzan, it is must for them to have Rooh Afza. If we talk beyond the food, I think the, you know, the Jummatul Wida, if you look back, you won't find anything very concrete about Jummatul Wida in the religious text. But the way it is observed, it is celebrated in the Indian subcontinent. Say, for example, in Iran, it is observed as Quds Day in support of the Palestinians. And in other different regions, there are different beliefs related to it. But in Indian subcontinent, it is observed like a festival within a festival. And there is a great deal. Other tradition can be the Sehri Walas. During the time of Sehri, Suhoor, there are people who come by reciting hums, naats, beating drums to wake the people up for this Suhoor. So these are the, some of the traditions which we can take into account if we are exploring the diversity in the Indian subcontinent with in comparison to the rest of the world.
And last but not least, sir, how do non-Muslims in the Indian subcontinent participate in or support the celebration of Ramadan, and what impact does this have on interfaith relations?
Taking from the point where I have left previously, when I was in hostel, we were having the Hindu friends residing with us in the hostels. Even today, when we are in our work and system, our colleagues, we often find them, you know, they are at times, they, you know, keep fast along with us. When we are at a distance from the mosque, I had my colleagues dropping me to the mosque for the prayers, waiting outside the mosque for me to finish. Moreover, if you go to any of the street in India, even to the streets which are not dominated by the Muslim population, at the time of iftar, you will find that the shop owners, they do come out of their shops with the dates in their plates and water to offer, drinks to offer. So they understand that there might be someone who might not have reached the home, or they might be late in reaching out their homes. So the offering of these dates, the water, and this overall understanding is something where the communities basically gel in. We have friends visiting us with the food, visiting along with us to the food stalls, which are, you know, stalled during the holy month of Ramzan. So this gives a very, you know, India and the whole of the subcontinent is very proud of the diversity we have, the cultural diversity, the religious diversity, the linguistic diversity. But the way we get in, or the way we come together to celebrate any kind of festival, is something which is a good example for the world to see. And even for the holy month of Ramadan, the communities do come in together. There might be one or two instances out of the blue moon somewhere, but largely it is peaceful. The coexistence of the different religious, linguistic, and cultural communities or diversities even make it a wonderful experience where we can share different cultural associated with the holy month of Ramzan, and different people also being very enthusiastic about knowing about the holy month of Ramzan.
On that note, I would like to thank Mr. Ahmar Afaq from India for being on the program. Thank you, sir. Now, let's see what people around the world had to say.
B. Mahmoud tweeted, I need Ramadan to come and fix my entire life. Allahumma balighna Ramadan. From a personal perspective, there hasn't been a Ramadan that I've needed like this one. My Lord, do not forbid us from the goodness it brings, though we are not deserving. Make us from those who win. Zahra wrote, literally can't wait for Ramadan iftar evenings and Sahari mornings, the gatherings over what Allah loves, like the whole vibe of the month where the hearts are at so much calm and peace, where it's just you and your Allah, where everything just pulls you closer to Him. Shehbaz Sharif tweeted, finalized Ramadan package today prepared by the Punjab government on my directions. Under this package, the poorest of the poor will be given flour free of cost. Federal government will work with other provinces to launch similar schemes for the benefit of people affected by inflation. Laila wrote, "I need Ramadan to bring that peace into my heart again, like it always does. It's come at a time where I really need it. Inshallah, we all get to experience another beautiful Ramadan this year."
And that was our episode on Ramadan in the subcontinent and various traditions and practices associated with the holy month. We should meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
An analyst known for accurately predicting past crises has claimed that a recent spate of failures in the US portends economic trouble and bank and cryptocurrency failures ahead. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, Stephanie Pombe, the U.S. economist known for her predictions of America's early 2000s housing bubble and the 2008 global financial collapse, has sounded the alarm on a recent spate of bank and cryptocurrency failures that could be just the beginning of another cascading crisis in the U.S. "What we are facing right now is really serious," Pombe, founder of economic research firm Macro Maven, said recently in a Fox News interview, adding, "We are on the brink of a 2008-style financial crisis." She made her assessment in the Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, by federal regulators, the second largest failure in U.S. banking history. SVB's collapse came on the heels of this week's closure of cryptocurrency lender Silvergate Bank, as well as the bankruptcies last fall of crypto firms FTX, BlockFi, and Three Arrows Capital. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen issued a statement recently declaring that the U.S. banking system remains resilient and regulators have effective tools to address this type of event. Pombe was unconvinced, mocking Yellen for an absolutely insane focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion at a time when rapid increases in interest rates by the U.S. Federal Reserve are exposing the fragility of the nation's debt-laden financial system. The economy said, "Look, you don't raise rates in record fashion on an economy touting record leverage at maximum speculation and expect no consequences," adding, "This was clearly going to happen, and now we are seeing the weak links in the chain break. The areas where speculation was most rampant and most egregious are clearly coming down." She added that years of excessive risk-taking are coming back to bite them hard and predicted that the situation will devolve very rapidly. Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy argued that just as in the 2008 financial crisis, which stemmed partly from the federal government's push to ease credit standards in low-income communities, SVB's failure may have been fueled by politics. In SVB's case, a focus on so-called sustainable finance, or ESG, may have contributed to bad lending decisions, he said, adding, "When we don't learn lessons, history repeats itself." Billionaire hedge fund manager Bill Ackman warned that SVB's failure may trigger runs on other troubled banks, causing a 2008-like chain reaction as the dominoes continue to fall. Meanwhile, the New York Times noted the U.S. economy could quickly shed a million jobs and fall into recession if lawmakers fail to raise the nation's bar for the federal government exhaust its ability to pay its bills on time. The chief economist of Moody's Analytics, Mark Zandi, warned a Senate panel recently. The damage could spiral to 7 million jobs lost and a 2008-style financial crisis in the event of a prolonged breach of the debt limit, in which House refused for months to join Democrats in vote. Zandi and his colleagues Kristen Riaritis and Bernard Yarrow's analysis prepared for the Senate Bank economic policy. Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts, held the hearing on the debt limit and its economic and financial consequences at a moment of fiscal brinksmanship. House Republicans are demanding deep spending cuts from Biden in exchange for voting to raise the debt limit, which caps how much money the government can borrow. That debate is likely to escalate when Biden releases his latest budget proposal. The president is expected to propose reducing America's reliance on borrowed money by raising taxes on high earners and corporations. But he almost certainly will not match the level of spending cuts that will satisfy Republican demands to balance the budget in a decade. The report also warns of a stark economic damage if Biden, in an attempt to avert a default, agrees to those demands. In that scenario, the dramatic spending cuts that would be needed to balance the budget would push the economy into recession in 2024, cost the economy 2.6 million jobs, and effectively destroy a year's worth of economic growth over the next decade, Zandi and his colleagues wrote. They said the only real option is for lawmakers to come to terms and increase the debt limit in a timely way. Any other scenario results in significant economic damage. The economy is very vulnerable, he added, saying, even without the debt limit drama, the recession risks are high. It won't take much to push us in, and this is certainly a lot more than much. Zandi's analyses are frequently cited by the Biden administration in support of its economic policy proposals. In this case, Warren is using the Moody's work to push Biden in a letter sent to the White House this week to resist Republican demands for spending cuts and instead continue insisting on a debt limit increase that is not tied to any changes in fiscal policy. Warren, in an interview, said everyone has been talking up to now about how dangerous it would be to default on the national debt, and that's right. But it would be even more dangerous to give in to the Republican cuts. The president has stood strong, and I urge him to continue to do that. Zandi's projections join a growing list of warnings from forecasters on Wall Street and at Washington think tanks about the consequences of failing to increase the borrowing limit in a timely manner. House Republicans have refused to raise the limit unless Biden agrees to deep but unspecified cuts in federal spending. They say the nation's current levels of debt, accumulated in bipartisan fashion over two decades of the federal government spending more money than it receives in tax revenue, pose a current and future threat to economic growth. The government hit its statutory $31.4 trillion debt limit in January. The Treasury Department is employing what is essentially accounting maneuvers that allow it to continue to pay all its bills on time. But those maneuvers work only for a third limited time. Independent groups like the Bipartisan Policy Center in Washington and the Congressional Budget Office have estimated that sometime this summer or early this fall, the U.S. government will no longer be able to pay everyone, including bondholders, Social Security recipients, and federal employees, on time. The Moody's team estimates that deadline, known as the X date, will fall on August 15th.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a way? Proudly, she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray five times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about, in fact, some of the rules related to fasting and Ramadan, since we are in the month of mercy, in the month of barakah, and in the month of Ramadan. So we're going to deal with this, in fact, according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
Little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, That's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching Makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about the rules of fasting and the month of Ramadan and some of the questions and answers related to it. Coming with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, you know, some people have problems with their gums and it's always bleeding the mouth. They got a problem with it. So sometimes blood gets mixed up with their saliva. Sometimes they're not sure whether this is saliva that enters the throat or which one is mixed with blood or not. So what's the rule about their fasting? Is their fasting valid? Are they supposed to, like, fast at all based on the Jewish beliefs?
That's a very good question. The blood from your gums, let's say, dissolves in the saliva and it disappears in the sense that there's no traces, or there are no traces of blood seen in the saliva. It's just as white as saliva itself and not red in the form of blood, you know. So it is in Arabic word they call it istihlak. So it has disappeared. The blood has disappeared in the saliva. Mm-hmm. So it's pure, and of course there's no problem in swallowing it in, mm-hmm. Yeah, and allowing the swallow the saliva to get into your throat. And of course, in this case, the fast is not made invalid. And in the event, because sometimes you are not able to check your saliva whether there is blood less, whether the blood has disappeared or not, or whether there are any traces of blood available in the saliva or not. So if you are not sure that the blood is mixed with it or not. So in this case, it can be, of course, swallowed. You know, it will not affect the fast because you're not sure.
Mm-hmm, I see. Another problem that some people may, experience is that, you know, usually it's always recommended actually for individuals who are fasting to brush their teeth, but sometimes they forget, all right?
Yeah.
And there may remain some bits of food in their mouth between their teeth. So, and some of these bits of food may be unintentionally swallowed.
Yes.
All right. If that happens, in that scenario, what happens to the fasting? Is their fast void? And if it is invalidated, should they perform the qada?
Well, if you did not know that some particles of food or bits of food remained between the teeth, or you did not know that they would reach the throat, and of course you knew that there were some particles, there were some bits of food left in the mouth, you did not know that they would reach the throat, and mm-hmm. of course, but you know, and finally they were swallowed unknowingly or unintentionally, and then of course then you are not liable to make qada of the fast. You see, there's nothing on you, and you should assume that your fast is valid, because you did not swallow it deliberately and intentionally or knowingly. Something happened without you intending it. So you are not to blame, and you are not liable for any qaza either.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break, and we'll be back with more questions related to your jurisprudence of fasting and Ramadan. So stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. This is Muhammad Jawad hosting this program, and our guest speaker, Sheikh Javid. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to fasting and Ramadan based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, I know that I've asked you this question a couple of times before related to fasting and Ramadan when we were talking about swimming, all right? And you said, I remember that, it's okay if you have like some parts of your body in the water, but you can't dip the head.
Sure.
Right? So dipping the head, that's all over. Your fast is rendered void.
Yes.
But the thing is, what about pouring some water over your head? Sometimes people become so thirsty and they take it, or they pour some water over the head. Of course, they don't dip their head in the water like the swimming pool.
Yes.
But is that allowed? Like, is it permissible for those people to fast?
Yeah, I think I shouldn't say I think, because it's something that I should quote and should actually cite the risala or the treatise of His Eminence Ayatollah Khomeini. He has stated clearly that pouring water on one's head with a jug full of water actually does not affect the one's fasting. And so it's not considered immersing one's head. What, according to his opinion, immersing one's head underwater or submerging underwater makes the fast void. But in this scenario, of course, pouring water, even though the quantity of water is, it might be too much, since it's not considered in common view, it's not considered to be immersing underwater, immersing one's head underwater. So it's not going to affect people's fasting. So you are allowed. So it's just like going to taking a shower and then standing under the shower and washing your head and neck and then the body, because you pour, the pressure of the water might be too much. You feel that there's too much water coming down on your head. So it does not, absolutely, it does not affect your fast, and there's no objection to you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Another question would be related to the women's diseases. You know, there are certain medicines or drugs that are applied through the vagina. There are some suppositories that are usually, used through the anus of some people to prevent, for example, from fever. So the question is that does this kind of, or the use of this kind of medicine or drug invalidate fasting?
Well, the use of such medicine does not invalidate the fast. If a person, there is a difference, or there are different scenarios. Suppositories are supposed to be hard things, or inserted in the and the patient's anus, to bring down or to reduce the fever. But if let's say fluid is inserted. And it's called emala in Arabic. Of course, if fluid is inserted in the back passage, of course, it will definitely have effect. It will make the fast void, because fluids make this.
But non-fluids?
Non-fluids do not have any effect on the individual's fasting.
So their fasting is okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Tawbit, for your nice comments and contribution to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which I try to ask some of the questions, especially in these series of episodes, related to the month of Ramadan and the questions related to fasting. And please, I earnestly ask you to pray for us, especially in this blessed month of Ramadan. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English. Right, coming up is the news.